With the new Chevy Silverado, you might be driving in this. But with the Silverado's redesigned interior and large infotainment screens, it'll feel more like this. Introducing the new 2022 Chevy Silverado. Find new upgrades. Find new roads. Chevrolet.
Thank you for downloading Tucker Center Talks. This is Season 3, Episode 3. You're listening to Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota and a co-production with WISP Sports. I'm your host for Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, Director of the Tucker Center. The Tucker Center is the first of its kind. It's a world-class research center and a thought leader that accelerates systems change for girls and women in sport. Tucker Center Talks is a place where I get to talk to, amplify, and support my female colleagues. These are amazing women who study sport and gender. We let data tell the story, and we talk about research and ways in which we use data to change the world through the context of sport to be a better place. Speaking of making the world a better place, today I get to talk to Dr. Janet Fink. She is an associate dean and professor of sport management at University of Massachusetts Amherst. She is an award-winning teacher and scholar. If you look at her bio, the list is quite long of all the awards and accolades she has earned in her career. She is a NASM Research Fellow, a TC Tucker Center affiliated scholar. She and I have co-authored a couple papers together. Paddling down the Mississippi River, maybe we can talk about that, Dr. Fink, and has been named a most influential female scholar by many guests on Tucker Center Talk. So you could say she is on here by demand. Please help me welcome Dr. Janet Fink.
Well, thanks, Dr. Lavoie. I think that it just means that I'm old, that you had a lot of people say that I might have been influential, but that was a very nice introduction.
Well, I know a lot of old women, and they wouldn't end up on my list, so I think you're being way too modest.
Okay.
All right. So you are in the latter stages of your career, and you have had a fruitful career studying sport and gender over the years. So tell us a little bit about some of those lines of research, just really top line. What have you been interested in your career?
So in my career, I really started out with, it's kind of an interesting story. I was interning in the athletic department, in an athletic department, I won't name it. And I worked with a woman who was an incredible senior women's administrator. And I would notice that all the guys would go out to lunch together and they would never ask her to go along. And sometimes they would ask the younger women, but not often, you know. And so as that experience resonated with me, it turned into my dissertation, which was about sort of managing diversity in sport and how to sort of better harness the diversity that may or may not have been in athletic departments at that time. But even, you know, this white woman was being excluded, right? And probably they weren't taking advantage of her expertise in a way that they could, if they wouldn't have been so exclusionary. And I wasn't even sure I don't think they were doing it on purpose. I just think they didn't think to ask, right?
Right.
And so I had this sort of org behavior piece to my research. But what I was really passionate about, which took off a little later in my career, was the marketing of female athletes in women's sports and how we did it and how women athletes were portrayed and the lack of portrayal and the difference in their portrayal and what it meant to the actual product. And that's really where my passion sort of flourished, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because your thinking and your lines of inquiry now are never more relevant than before, because we have this growth of women's teams and leagues, and the female athletes are on the forefront. And I think that women's leagues are starting to be marketed differently, but maybe you have some thoughts on that.
No, I completely agree with you, Nicole. I'm a pessimist by nature, but I am so heartened by the way things seem to be changing. And it's been through a lot of hard work. And I would also argue it's because female athletes are just really relevant right now in these times, because a lot more so than many male athletes are willing to speak out about controversial issues. They're willing to show sort of their vulnerability in areas. And I think that they kind of make for really good ambassadors for brands and even movements. So I think that we're seeing a new era of women in sport.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things we're working on with some collaborative entities with the Tucker Center team is, how do we build out like this new model of marketing, promoting, sponsoring women's sport and not reproduce the male model? And I think some of the work that the Sports Innovation Lab is doing, and Wasserman, and some sport agencies and women's leagues like the NWSL and the WNBA, it seems like there's this synergy coming together. Is that just me, or are you seeing the same?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think that there's a momentum there right now that I've never seen before. It's been a long time coming. And I don't think that you should naturally or just replicate the way we've marketed men. But I also don't think that you want to other women's sports to such a great extent that they become like, I think Mary Jo Cain said this, like a pink ghetto. Where they're again not in the mainstream. And so one thing I think about, because you asked me to think about some of the questions that I have, and I may be jumping ahead here, but something you said made me think about it. A lot more brands are jumping on board with women's sports and sponsoring women's sports. And I think that that's awesome, because they need the support. On the other hand, I see sort of a difference in how they're positioning their support. So if you were to read in the Sport Business Journal about, you know, BMW deciding to sponsor the Major League Soccer, you would read about how their target markets are the same. Their target market buys their product. We think that this will drive sales, blah, you know, that's what you would hear, right? And when you, like, this may be just me, but some people have done some studies on it. When you see now that brands are sponsoring women's sport, it's about lifting women's sports up. It's about, you know, contributing to the movement. It's about helping female athletes, which I think are all super great things. But I also think that they're probably...
Here comes the but. Wait for it. But...
But I also think that they're probably trying to sell some of their products to the people who are sitting in the stands and really liking that product that is being produced on the court. And while I recognize that one of the returns on investments and one of the reasons that people engage in sponsorship or companies engage in sponsorship is for this, you know, reciprocal feeling of gratitude from people in the stands, right? Like, isn't that nice of Pepsi to sponsor the Super Bowl, whatever? It seems to be hit on really strongly with the sponsorship of women's sport. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I haven't studied it, but it's just a different thing that I notice. And I hope, you know, if the only thing that you're telling your audience is that you're building up the sport, that you're helping female athletes, that you're, it makes it seem like they're less than somehow.
Right.
That they have to have this help.
Yeah, it's an altruistic act instead of a business proposition with value. And we don't want to ghettoize women's sport to say, oh, well, you know, Secret sponsoring the NWSL, isn't that nice? Let's all buy Secret because they're behind women's sport and isn't that nice? Well, yes, that's nice. And they're amazing athletes that should be supported like their male colleagues. So let's talk about that too.
Yes. And I also think that Secret probably looked at some of the demographics of people watching women's sports and decided that that might be a pretty good match for them. And I just wonder if you're constantly talking about, oh, well, we have to uplift the sport. We have to uplift these athletes. We have to, you know, we have to support them so that they can survive. Does that make the product seem less than? I don't know. I haven't done any studies, but it's just something that's come to my mind when I've seen sort of this slightly different way of announcing these sponsorships.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think we know, and I think that's a question that we need answered. Is this a good tactic and we should do more of it, or does it help marginalize the product we're trying to sell? I don't think we know that answer yet.
I think the answer might be both, Nicole. I think that it's probably really good for Secret. You know, I think it's really mm-hmm. good for that product, but maybe not so good for the product that we're trying to promote. Doesn't everyone feel good about a local sports bar that sponsors their little league team? You know, they're not really getting all that much out of it, but you know, it's a little league team.
Right. Okay. Well, I think this is something that we should all think about together, because we don't know the answers. And there's lots of things that I certainly don't know and you don't know and we don't know. And that, for those graduate students listening,
that might be a very good dissertation topic.
Perk your ears up. Okay. So what are some of the things over the years with your research that have really been sticky, that, you know, you did X study and it really resonated with people? What are some of the ideas that have really translated well to the public that really helped create social change?
I guess I laugh a little bit because I feel, you know, sometimes my research doesn't get out to the public as much as I'd like it to. But one of the things that really stuck, and I'm not sure it's because of anything I did, but because of how well Kate Fagan wrote about it in ESPNW, was the whole idea of the fact that sex doesn't really sell women's sport. That if you show them as athletes and you highlight their athleticism, that you're probably much more likely to sell a ticket to an event, to a women's event, than by, you know, highlighting their femininity or their physical appearance. It certainly doesn't help if you have great athletes who are also really great looking. I mean, Sue Bird and we can go on and on.
But absolutely.
It's their athleticism that really hooks a sports fan. You may get some guy that turns on a tennis tournament and watches it for a while because someone pretty is playing, but you're not going to turn him into a tennis fan. You're going to turn him into a tennis fan by showing him really great tennis being played. And so that's the research over, you know, 5 or 6 studies that I did that I think stuck the most. But honestly, I think it stuck the most and got the most play because Kate had a really nice way of taking it to the public via an ESPNW article that got it attention that it wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Right. Got it out of our musty journals and into the pages of the citizenship where people could actually see it and read it and think about it. And I will quote our colleague and co-author, Dr. Mary Jo Kane, the founder of the Tucker Center, who is known for her pithy sound bites, that sex sells sex, sex doesn't sell women's sport. And I think that is the data that a lot of what you had garnered over the course of your career, I think that really sums it up nicely.
Well, I've often said that Mary Jo is my academic idol. She knows it. Everyone knows it. And so Mary Jo, as you know, is a sociologist, so probably did studies a little bit differently. I was trained a little bit differently. And in the end, I think we could tell a pretty complete story that no matter how you studied it, the outcome looked the same. So,
yes. And that's one of the things I loved about working with you and Mary Jo on the two papers that we did together is that we all brought a different lens to the perspective, the data, the analysis, and what it meant. And I will just tell this brief story because I think it's great advice for any researchers. You know, we were at all different points of our career when we worked together. And we get really excited about the data and we go off on a tangent and Mary Jo would always bring us back, right? And the analogy was, now we're on the Mississippi River and we're starting in the headwaters, which happened to be in Minnesota, so it was sort of appropriate. And we're paddling down the Mississippi River. And there's all these tributaries that are interesting and beautiful, but we're not going there. So stay on the river. And you and I would laugh. And then every time we met as a research team, she goes, okay, now we're in St. Louis and we're on our way to New Orleans.
And we've got to get to our port. And we won't get to our port if we go through every tributary that seems interesting. Yeah,
that's right.
You know, I think I've told that story to my own PhD students and even in my own work, when I start to go sort of off, I think back to that story and it's had a real impact on my work.
Yes, one of many ways that Dr. Kane has impacted sport and gender scholarship. So since we're sort of on this idea of, you know, giving advice to young scholars, I think the staying on the Mississippi River and, you know, go from A to B and don't divert, even though it's interesting, that's a different study. What other advice do you give young scholars, and especially women, young women scholars, because you've mentored so many of them?
I could take this so many different ways. I think that you need, like, the most important thing you need to do is to find a line and continue it to its fruition, right? So I think I told you when you asked me to do this podcast that I haven't done a whole lot of my own research in several years, but I think part of that is because I answered a lot of the questions that I had at the beginning of my career. You know, I went boom, and that study produced then this study, and then that study kind of produced this study. And if you look at my work, it can tell a story. And if you try to do too many really different things, you can't go deep enough into one story. So I try to stay in a line of research. I mean, I had more than one, don't get me wrong, but there was one that I was always super passionate about.
Okay.
A second thing would be something that I wasn't very good at, but that you're great at, and my younger colleagues are great at, and that is that I think early and often you need to connect with industry folks who can make a difference and take your research out to where it matters. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, I just felt like I was writing for myself or for you or for, you know, other women scholars who would read this. And really until it got picked up in the media a little bit, partially because I worked with the Tucker Center, partially because Kate Fagan picked up on it, some other folks. I mean, it never would have gotten out there. But now I see my younger colleagues, you know, working with Wasserman or getting involved with, industry partners that we have through UMass that I just didn't have the ability to do when I was a young scholar.
And I think maybe this is just my own opinion, but it seems recently that industry and sport properties are actually starting to maybe value our work and that they're turning to us for insight and advice and guidance to answer the questions that they need answering. And we've been sitting back here for, 20 plus or more years saying, we have some data, we have some answers. And they said, yeah, well, we do our own research. So thank you very much. But now I think they're starting to come to us in different ways. Is that just me or do you see that too?
No, I do see that too. I find it interesting though, that some sport entities are way more than willing to take what you say and say, oh, wow, that's really interesting. And other sport entities want to make your data fit what they already think they know the answer to.
Right.
And so it's a hard, that's one of the issues of working with industry is, you have to convince them that what you've produced is like neutral and that you've done it the right way. And that actually this is the outcome, not yes. really what you were thinking. So that's later in my career, I did a little bit of work with industry and I found that challenging, but not surprising.
Right. And one of the things that I'm finding challenging is they want our expertise for free. And that I'm finding is not okay.
Yes.
We have a lot of expertise that we've developed over the years. And if I was a consultant for an industry agency, you would pay me a lot of money for my expertise. And I don't think it's fair to ask academics to give it away for free. And I'm saying that publicly because I'm putting everybody on alert. Do not give your expertise away for free.
Right. Well, it's a rock and a hard place though, because you can get such great rich data if they allow you in that then you would have to pay for probably to have someone collect for you if you didn't get in there. But I completely agree with you, Nicole, that they ask us to do this for free and, they're paying their research companies 10 times the amount that they're willing to pay us. And we probably produce better research. So
yes,
not better, different research.
Different and better.
Well, I don't want to get in trouble with any of my.
No, you don't. That is my words. Different.
Different. So, but yes, there's no reason that you need to give it away for free. No. But on the other hand, you have to become a fairly established scholar before you start to begin to throw your weight around like that.
That is correct. Yes. So for the young women, you do things you do it for free to get your foot in the door, and free might mean you get access and networking and other things that don't have monetary value, but provide value to your career nonetheless. So I think that is important. I'm being a little facetious when I'm saying, don't give it away for free, because I'm actually in a position where I can say that and it's not going to impact my career trajectory. So I'll put a caveat on that. All right. One more piece of advice for young women scholars.
Well, I just think don't get discouraged. I think things are getting so much better, and it may not look like that to them because they haven't been where we have been. But you know, women's sport, it's going to grow more slowly, probably still compared to what was I was flipping around the channels the other day and they had a cornhole tournament on ESPN. And I'm like, really? I mean, you can't find a woman's sport to throw on here.
Come on now.
So I get discouraged. So I know that, you know, younger women just starting their career must get discouraged, but you slowly but surely build up this data. And when you have data that's hard to argue with and shows that people can sell better doing it a certain way, it makes a difference and they start to listen. And so, you know, I wouldn't give up. And another piece of advice, and I don't even know if people are telling people this still these days, but like when I was starting out, I had a female faculty member. Say to me, oh, you don't want to just study women. That will pigeonhole you.
I had somebody tell me that too, Janet. You don't want to be that scholar.
Exactly.
That was their exact words.
And by the way, this particular scholar studied a very specific group of people, not women. But, you know, a very specific demographic. And I just wanted to say, well, you do this, right?
Right.
But I didn't, because I was a young scholar. But I also didn't listen to her. And so, you know, there are plenty of people out there that can give you bad advice. So, you know, go to the mentors that you trust. And if you think you've gotten a piece of advice that just doesn't feel right with you, it's okay to not take that advice.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good advice. All right. So let's wrap this up. We have a little bit of a speed round here.
Okay.
Your favorite badass woman right now?
Megan Rapinoe.
Okay. Your favorite book that you're reading or have read recently?
Her autobiography. I'm not obsessed or anything.
Very consistent answers. One influential female scholar.
Mary Jo Kane.
Dr. Kane, the Kane, we say. And last but not least, your favorite golf course.
I have to pick one?
Yep, just one. If you had to golf your last round on earth, where would you go?
Well, I think that would be someplace where I've never been. I'd like to golf St. Andrews.
Okay. I thought maybe you would say Pebble Beach, because that's a, you know.
But I think I'm going to, that trip was in the making until the pandemic hit.
Of course it was. Yes.
But have you golfed Pebble Beach?
I have not. It's on my bucket list.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I've done Torrey Pines, but not Pebble Beach.
Wow. Good for you.
Okay. So favorite golf course, we'll go with St. Andrews. Okay. Well, it was my pleasure to talk to you today, Janet, and you're well-respected by all of us in the field, and it was really fun to be able to talk to you and see you. So, any last parting words of wisdom?
No, just keep up the good work at the Tucker Center. You're really great at what you do. So pleased that you've kept everything going so well, and I think it's in really good hands. So,
Well, thanks. And for the note, I did not pay her to say that, and that was not in our show notes or script. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So as we wrap this up today, be sure to check out our many free evidence-based resources on our website at tuckercenter.org. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. And you can find the show notes with links and resources for this episode at wisports.com. Look for Tucker Center Talks under the Listen tab, where you'll find many more conversations from the world of women's sport. Thank you for listening and helping to us turn up the volume on women's sport. That's a wrap for Tucker Center Talks. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, signing off to make a difference in the lives of girls and women in sport. Stay safe. Give yourself grace, support others, and always let the data tell the story.